Good morning. I want to encourage everybody to take a Bible and open it to Proverbs, the 17th chapter. I want to read a few words about our words this morning. Welcome all that are with us and look forward to that time when we can get back to a more normal gathering. But for now, we are thankful for this opportunity, this ability we have. Proverbs 17 and verse 27, "He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive." I want you to think about that as I turn to Colossians, the 4th chapter, and read a few words from there. Colossians 4 and verse 5 says, "Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." When you take these two passages together, when we say things we shouldn't say, when we say things in the wrong way, one of two things can happen, and sometimes both happen. We may be made to appear foolish. People look at us and think how foolish that was, how stupid that was. Sometimes we end up alienating people when we say things that are not seasoned with salt, that we don't think how to answer, then we are not walking in wisdom toward those who are outside. Or for that matter, sometimes those who are inside. The wrong choice of words can make us look foolish. It can alienate. It can cost us our soul. Look at Matthew, the 12th chapter with me. Matthew 12, Jesus has some very, I will say at the very least, sobering words, if not frightening. Verse 33, he says, "Either make the tree good and its fruit good, or else make the tree bad and its fruit bad. For a tree is known by its fruit. Brood of vipers, how can you, being evil, speak good things? For out of the abundance of the heart, the mouth speaks. A good man, out of the good treasure of his heart, brings forth good things. And an evil man, out of the evil treasure, brings forth evil things. But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." You look at verse 37. We have other passages that talk about different things that might cause us to be lost. But here he says, "By your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." We've all known people whose every word seemed to be profane. It just seemed they didn't seem to be able to talk without profanities, obscenities coming forth. Why is that? Well, because they have a heart that is profane. They have a heart, a mind that is not geared toward holy things. The kind of heart we have is going to reflect itself in our words. If we truly love God, it's going to come forth in our speech. If we love our neighbor as ourselves, it will reflect. And conversely, if we don't love our neighbor as ourselves, it will reflect itself in the way we speak. Who is our neighbor? Jesus tried to clear that up a long time ago in the parable of the Good Samaritan. Our neighbor is not the person who has to look like us. He doesn't have to think like us in the political realm. He says, love your neighbor. I want to begin by talking about a few things that are, I think, the things being talked about today. The sort of things that a lot of people are talking about and offer to you my beginning premise. Either they end up sounding foolish or they end up alienating people. And as Christians, I want to caution us. Let's try to stay away from these kinds of things. Some of the things that I'm hearing, and let me say, by hearing, sometimes I mean reading. Some of this is posted on social media. Some of it engaged in conversations. You know, in regard to the coronavirus, do you think the government, whether federal, state, local, they overreacted or they reacted too slowly? When should the government begin to ease these restrictions on business? Which businesses should they be allowing back in? Should states shut down their borders and not allow people to come from other states? Do states have that constitutional right to do that? You know, we've heard about different drugs. Is this the miracle drug that's going to save us all? What do you think about the job the president's done in all of this? Let me just say to you, I don't know whether we overreacted or we reacted too slowly. I don't know a way to express. Now, I may talk about it among my family and some of my closest friends, but I don't know a way to talk about the reopening of America that either I don't come across as not caring about the lives of people or not caring about the jobs of people. And I don't want to come across either way. And the fact of the matter is, I won't be the one that makes that decision anyway. So why do I feel like I need to get out here and let everybody know what I think about it? I won't make any of those decisions. If I'm a doctor who's faced with a question about this drug, or I happen to be that COVID-19 patient, and the doctor is saying, here's an option. You know, some people think this drug will save you. Some people think it could cause some lasting harmful effects. Some people think it's like taking candy. It won't do you any good, but it won't hurt you. If I'm the doctor, I'm the patient, then I need to have an opinion about it. I don't have to have an opinion about that right now. You know, there are people who think the president is doing the greatest job that could ever be done. There are people who think he's a complete failure. And there are people who are somewhere in between. You don't want to know what I think? I think that I need to keep my opinion to myself. Because if I come out and I defend him, somebody's going to be, well, what about so-and-so? If I come out critical of him, then they're going to come. No. As Christians, I guess my point is we've got a lot better things to talk about. And that's what I want us to talk about here for a few moments. I'm a little behind on my clicking. That happens sometimes. Do we really need to get involved in all these hot topics? What we need to be in our words is a force for good. Go back to Colossians 4 again and hear carefully what the apostle wrote. Maybe we could begin at verse 2. Continue earnestly in prayer, being vigilant in it with thanksgiving. Meanwhile, praying also for us that God would open to us a door for the word to speak the mystery of Christ, for which I am also in chains, that I may make it manifest as I ought to speak. Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one. I guess because of the current situation, this lesson has got some special application toward the topics of the day, and especially toward the way some Christians are behaving on social media. But I want us to take this lesson long past this current crisis. The day comes when, of course, we'll continue to be using social media, but we'll be at work. We'll be at school. We'll be around people at ball games, and there will be conversations. Our obligation, our charge is to try to be a force for good. In Matthew, the 5th chapter, in verse 14, he said, "You are the light of the world. A city that is set on a hill cannot be hidden, nor do they light a lamp and put it under a basket, but on a lampstand, and it gives light to all who are in the house. Let your light so shine before men that they may see your good works and glorify your Father in heaven." Every word I speak, every word that I write, that you say, may not necessarily be able to make your light shine brighter, but I ought to really make a conscious effort. And it takes a conscious effort to make sure I don't say or do anything that makes my light dimmer, that reflects poorly. I need to be a force for good. I need to be one who shows compassion. Compassion is defined as concern for the problems of others with a desire, if at all possible, to alleviate that suffering. Sometimes there are situations there's not much at all, if anything, we can do. But you look at Jesus, Matthew the 9th chapter, verse 36. "But when he saw the multitudes, he was moved with compassion for them, because they were weary and scattered like sheep having no shepherd." He saw their wretched condition, and it touched him. In 1 Peter, the 3rd chapter, we are told that his disciples ought to have that same quality. "Finally, all of you be of one mind, having compassion for one another. Love as brothers. Be tenderhearted. Be courteous." I don't have to tell you. A lot of people are hurting right now. There are people who are very sick. There were people who were sick before we had COVID-19. There are people who continue to battle other serious illnesses. But there are thousands of Americans right now. There are thousands of people across the globe who are sick with this virus. There are people who are worried about them. But then there are a lot of people out of work. There are people who are hurting right now financially. This unique situation we find ourselves in has caused people where they can't be with family and friends. There are people who are in the hospital and they're having to be there alone in nursing homes like that. You know, there are people who've lost loved ones to the common ailments of life. There are people, thousands, who have lost loved ones because of this. There's all the uncertainty. When is this going to end? Are we peaking? You know, if we're peaking, still, how long do we have? Our words need to reflect that we care about people. Even if I've not been directly impacted, I haven't been sick with this. None of my family members have been sick. Maybe you're still working, but you know people who aren't. You know, going back to, there are all kinds of views about the government's handling of this, you know, on every extreme. None of that matters when I'm talking to somebody who's hurting. And I don't mean by this that there's no place for humor. Proverbs 17:22 says, "A merry heart does good like medicine, but a broken spirit dries up the bones. We need to be able to laugh. And we need to be able to share laughs together. But I would caution, make certain that your humor is not at the expense of others. And that you're making fun of situations that are causing people a lot of pain, a lot of suffering. Going back to the very first proverb I read, basically Solomon says we would all be better if we talked less. And that's advice I need. I need to learn when to be quiet. We all do. But we don't need to always be quiet. We need to recognize when people are hurting and use our words, whether they be by a card, a text, a phone call. Social media has its dangers, but it also has some positives. You can go to somebody's Facebook page and you can say something nice, something caring, something encouraging. And that's the next thing. And it goes together, but Acts, the 4th chapter, you read about a man named Joseph, except we don't know him by the name Joseph, because the apostles gave him the name Barnabas, son of encouragement. Wouldn't it be nice if people looked at us and said, I know what name his parents gave him, but when I see him, I just think of a Barnabas. And let's not forget, when Barnabas had to fight, Barnabas was willing to fight the good fight of faith. In Acts the 15th chapter, when those Judaizing teachers came up to Antioch, Barnabas was right there with Paul in the battle for the truth of the gospel. I'm not suggesting we be compromisers, but I am saying that you see him here. People were hurting financially, and Barnabas stepped up. In Acts the 9th chapter, when Saul makes that first trip to Jerusalem and the disciples are wary of him and they're pulling back from him, who is it that steps up and says, no, this is a good man? It was Barnabas. I think even about the situation with John Mark, that he wouldn't give up on him. Proverbs 25:11 is a well-known passage where it says, words fitly spoken are like apples of gold in settings of silver. Apples of gold in settings of silver. I'm not certain exactly what he's trying to say there, the picture. Some translate it a little different, but every translation I've ever seen has this idea. It's a work of beauty. It's saying it's a beautiful thing. How do we speak fitting words? Well, we have to think about it. We have to give thought to it. I might add, the very next verse speaks about a wise rebuker. We're not to be a people who overlook sin. And sometimes there are people that need that wise rebuke. But even then, it needs to be a word fitly spoken. We need thought. Sometimes our words are more about self-pity. They're more words of complaining. They're murmuring. It can be murmuring about life situations. And I don't know anybody who likes what we're in right now. But you think it'll go away because we complain and we murmur and we, you know, call all our friends on the phone. We get on social media and we constantly complain. You think it'll get better? Is it going to help anybody else when it's not this? It's the school system. It's the roads. It's the church. Sometimes there are people who are always finding something to complain about. But look at Ephesians 4 and verse 29. Let no corrupt word proceed out of your mouth, but what is good for necessary edification, that it may impart grace to the hearers. I read words like that, and I think about myself in James 3. In James talking about the difficulty of bridling the tongue. You know, sometimes it's easier to tame a wild animal than to tame the tongue. My mouth hasn't always spoken those words that were good for necessary edification. They've not always imparted grace to the hearer, but that needs to be my aim. My aim ought to be not to make people feel good about themselves if they are separated from God, but when my brothers and my sisters, they're battling the discouragement that just comes from this self-isolation. They're battling the economic difficulties that are brought on by this. They're dealing with the struggles of sin and temptation of any kind. My words ought to be words that encourage them to run with endurance, to keep fighting the good fight. That's the kind of words I need to speak. And along that line, let's encourage people to get in the race. Our Lord made it very clear who the gospel was for. Go make disciples of all the nations, he said, Matthew 28:19. Mark 16:15, go preach the gospel to every creature. Luke 24, repentance and remission of sins was to be preached to all nations. He wanted everybody to hear it. And I think about passages like Acts 8. The disciples are scattered from Jerusalem because of persecution. I mean, they have to leave their homes because of their stand for the truth. And what do? It says in verse 4, they went everywhere preaching the word. The story picks back up in the 11th chapter about verse 19. With those who were scattered after the persecution of Stephen, and they're taking the gospel as far north as Antioch. We all need a deeper realization of the fact what the world needs most right now is the gospel of Jesus Christ. And we'd like to get through this crisis. But through this crisis, and after it's over, let's not forget there's still the greater crisis of sin and judgment. I've suggested before that if all I ever do is try to preach to somebody, every time they see me coming, or every time they see me on social media, they know it's going to be a sermon. After a while, sometimes maybe they tune me out. And I need to be careful that I don't overdo it. In fact, humor that's not at the expense of others, that's not ridiculing, you know, people who think a little differently than I do, you know, that's good. Post a picture of a beautiful sunset. Share a picture of your grandchildren. Those things, people need those. But when it comes to the gospel, much like we sometimes say about the teaching of our children, Deuteronomy 6, you remember he told the fathers, when you rise up, when you lie down, when you're going in, when you're coming out, that the teaching of your children is something that's just an ongoing process. It's not just one sermon, one, you know, sit down and have a class. We talk about looking for opportunities. Teaching moments is the expression often used. Look for those today with people. Try to encourage people to look toward Jesus, to look to his salvation. Technology, as it did earlier this morning, it can kind of let us down at times. But it also allows us to share the gospel with people that we might not ever be able to sit down with and talk. Using our website, you can send links to sermons. You can send videos. You know, there are just so many things. A question we need to really honestly ask ourselves. What matters more to us? What do we think more about? The politics of our age? Entertainment? Sports? Or all the lost souls that are out there? I prefer to just stay away from politics entirely. I will say a little bit about sports, but even then I try not to offend anybody, with that. You know, but what ought to matter most to me are souls. But I fear that sometimes the words we speak on these other subjects are closing doors to the gospel. If you are a political conservative or you're a political liberal, I want you to remember this. The folks who think the opposite of you politically have the exact same need for Jesus that you do. And don't say or do things that turn them away. The last use of our words is one that's not so much heard by others, but by God. Although, I mean, it's good to tell people we're praying for them, but I want us to use our words in prayer. Pray without ceasing, he said in 1 Thessalonians 5:17. You know the passage in James, the effective fervent prayer of a righteous man avails much. James 5:16. Pray. Pray for an end to this. Pray for our leaders. They have some tough decisions to make. Pray for our fellow citizens that they act wisely in these things. Pray that God give you the wisdom to take your compassion and help others. To be an encouragement. If you realize that you've not been much of a Barnabas, pray about it. Ask God to help you. Pray for open doors. Pray for those, a greater ability to teach other people. Pray for people who are hurting. Prayer matters. First and foremost, because we are talking to the Almighty. James went on to say that Elijah prayed that it wouldn't rain, and the Almighty shut the heavens for 3.5 years. He prayed again, and the Almighty opened it up, and it rained. I'm praying to the Almighty. But there's something else about prayer. And I truly believe this is part of why God wants us to pray. Is prayer that is honest and fervent, the kind of prayer that I'm not really ashamed to come to God with, has a tendency to take me away from my own selfish desires. And it tends to make me think of things that matter a lot more. To think about others that are hurting, that have needs, that are lost. If I pray to God, and yes, we make our petitions known to Him. We have legitimate needs and concerns. But the more I pray, the more I'm thinking about God and what He wants in this world and what matters to Him, and a lot less about what I want. Let's close by reminding ourselves of these three passages. Proverbs 17, verse 27, "He who has knowledge spares his words, and a man of understanding is of a calm spirit. Even a fool is counted wise when he holds his peace. When he shuts his lips, he is considered perceptive." And then Colossians 4, in verse 5, "Walk in wisdom toward those who are outside, redeeming the time. Let your speech always be with grace, seasoned with salt, that you may know how you ought to answer each one." And in Matthew 12, 36, "But I say to you that for every idle word men may speak, they will give account of it in the day of judgment. For by your words you will be justified, and by your words you will be condemned." Let's take our words seriously, because it's obvious that God does. Thank you for being with us. Thank you for listening. If you have questions about anything that's said, or if you have questions about any Bible topic, please feel free to contact us. We would be glad to talk with you further, whether it's in person with a little distance, you know, of course, or we can talk in some other way. Please feel free to reach out to us with any questions that you might have. Thank you again, and now we'll be led in a closing prayer.